If you become absolutely still, even for a moment, everything that's worth knowing is yours.
Adeline, I feel we just had a little 30 seconds of just dropping into the moment we're about to do of this conversation. And I like changing gears from just like moving around doing things to the first thing that came up just in feeling about being here is just like, just this, I started getting tingles of gratitude of just like, thanks for what you did to me yesterday. Like just such deep thankfulness. Cause it's, I want to start by sharing my experience. Yeah. So then it gives people context to your work and the potency of it. But it was just, thank you for being here.
Yeah, it's an honor.
I'll let you speak first.
No.
first 20 minutes is just me ranting.
It's fantastic. I love it. I want to hear it. Yeah.
So it was like I was introduced to it. I've heard of breath work. I've done bits of breath work. I've done pranayama in my yoga practice and just more gentle, I guess, ones and some more intense ones, but like nothing like this. Like my days, like, like there's so many elements I just want to share. Yeah. I mean, firstly, your ability to hold space and guide an individual into the deepest parts of their psyche where the trauma lies that unconsciously informs our behavior on a day-to-day basis. Mm. And to go, right, like within, my lead up for me, as you know, was like, very cerebral, like I'm worried about like hyperventilating. Yeah. I was nervous about like my heart going too fast and so many like anxieties. And and you were just like so great at going, this might happen or this might happen, but you just trust the process. It's older than science, you know, modern science.
Yeah.
And then, so one, just that your immensity of being, it's you know, that phase of you can only meet someone as deep as you've met yourself. That was so prevalent throughout the thing that you were so comfortable in holding me in shit, you know, some of my best friends I haven't seen.
Yeah.
You know, like in terms of the immensity of grief and trauma that was coming through me, from screaming to crying to shaking to pain in my body to just processing it so anatomically and emotionally and spiritually. Being able to hold me that, like just such deep reverence really, that you're able to do that for someone, to help them liberate themselves from the shackles and the binds of our conditioning and our collected impressions.
Yeah.
And then secondly, like the technique itself. So it was like a very simple breathwork technique. I felt like I started, like within five breaths, I was started getting dizzy. I was like, this is going to happen quickly. And then my neck started getting tingles and funny sensations. My arms were getting tingly. I can't even remember half my sensations, but I felt like I had about eight different types of sensations around my body within about 2 minutes.
Yeah.
And then, so it's like if I describe it with my hand, it's like, you know, something going along the surface. And then all of a sudden my body's shaking, like uncomfortable, then, and then just dropping underground and going plummet into another dimension where it was me in the womb, and ultimately, like there's a few stages before that, me, and then changing my relationship to, well, just being there for my child, womb, baby self, and the way I felt, and so intuitively, quickly perceived what he felt about whether it was safe or not, or these things, and I just realized so quickly that those first early impressions inform so much of my anxiety and lack of safety in the world, and lack of freedom to feel like I can be myself, or I need to compensate to be enough to be lovable by someone, all these kind of things that don't feel good being anything.
Yeah, yeah.
But the fact that you took me there so quickly, so effectively, and so, you know, like it's different to other practices like meditation and other slower, like it was so physically present, like it wasn't just like it's something I was processing in my psyche, it was processing in my psyche, it was processing in my, well, it's actually like, you probably, I'd love to hear your thoughts on this actually, because I feel like you was encouraging me to drop out of my cerebral and drop into the feeling.
Yeah.
So what I really know, I was just so much in my body and my feelings in my body that was stored in my anatomy, and they were moving physically and shaking and shifting and like how the fuck does that happen? Like, how does it, you just do a certain breath sequence and then all of a sudden your body starts release, it feels free or able to start releasing held attention.
Yeah.
Like,
yep.
What the fuck are you doing?
What the fuck happened? I know, right?
So that was my experience. And yeah.
Beautiful. So beautiful to hold you in that. So beautiful. And your willingness, you know, I love working with people like you. Mm. There's so much I could say about this. So much. I mean, that's why there's a lot of psychology behind it. There's a lot of philosophy behind it. There's a lot of what we call still working hypothesis, because, you know, it only ever works on you if you trust it and you can drop into the space. But to answer some of the questions that you've kind of brought up, as to how does that happen, how can the breath just drop you into such a memory that you haven't even experienced ever in your whole entire life? No. You don't even, you know, you don't remember. How can you remember the womb and what happened?
No.
Yeah?
How the hell? But it was as real as you in front of me now. It was like you, it was as real as anything.
Yeah. Yeah. So to kind of put it in, I guess, just a really simple term, to so that, you know, there's an understanding of what actually happens, is that when we're little, we're more in the reptilian brain than we are in the limbic. So we're more in the just the present here brain. The limbic brain comes in a little bit later and it's more the emotional ability to process emotions and the more subtle brain, I guess. So when we're little and things happen to us, traumas happen to us. Basically being born into this planet is traumatic for every single person. You know?
Yeah.
Unless you have fully conscious parents who have dealt with all of their birth trauma, they're 100% conscious, then you're going to have a traumatic birth. It's just the way it is. Right. It's just our inheritance onto this planet. So when we're born in a hospital with people around us who are in their birth trauma, straight away, bang, they're in there. It's so intense for us to come out of a watery climate. Like, we're just water. That's all that's all we know.
Yeah.
Like, we don't know there's something happening. There's a transition. We're about to become land beings. We're a water being.
So true. I never seen an episode like that.
Yeah. We're just this little water being.
We've been water beings for 9 months.
Everything that we need. We're attached to the placenta, which is our source. It's God. It's everything to us. We've got all of our needs met. We're starting to feel, as you experienced when you felt in the womb, we're starting to feel maybe anxiety, which is our mum's anxiety, you know, which is our lineage inheritance already starting to, you know, kind of come into us, you know. And then we're born. We might be born traumatically. We might be taken straight away. Our placenta's cut. Our connection to source gone. Straight into a, you know, a stark, light, bright environment. Our skin that's used to being held in this beautiful watery is suddenly a completely different environment, different people touching us, roughly rubbing us. You know, all of this is quite traumatic to a pure being, you know? So what happens is that our brain, our limbic brain starts to freak out, and our reptilian brain, which is here to keep us alive, basically says, I'll tuck all of this trauma into your body. Don't worry. We'll suppress it. We'll put it in the body.
Why is the body not able... Sorry to interject, but why is the body not able to process it there and then?
Well, because we're cut from our placenta. Right. If you were to have... one of my teachers, Leonard Orr, who is the founder of this style of breathwork, he also actually taught lotus birth. So he discovered that if we're born with our placenta intact in a very loving, beautiful environment, we won't have this. This won't happen to us.
Oh.
So our placenta is our connection to source, and some cultures, they do lotus birth where the placenta is kept intact until it naturally sloughs away, and then the child has been exploring the breath. They don't need to breathe while the placenta is still healthy.
So they're still in the sac while when they're out?
No, they're not in the sac. They've just got the placenta attached to their belly button.
Okay, gotcha.
And it's still nourishing them.
Gotcha.
So they can just experience the breath. They can play with the breath. They don't need to go, you know, that kind of fear, like, breathe now or you're going to die. right?
Sounds pretty fucked when you put it like that. Right. I mean, the thing is, no one's ever asked the baby what it feels like when they come out. So we don't.
There's a philosophy in science, which is that the baby doesn't feel.
Yeah.
Which is not true. And hence, you know, little boys being circumcised, you know.
Oh.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, there's a whole lot of stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a whole lot of trauma, which is why there's a whole movement of reclaiming the birth back.
Right.
Because reclaiming birth is how humans become, you know, more empowered because we're not born into trauma.
Mm.
If you're born into intense trauma, then you spend the rest of your life, you know, seeing the world from that trauma lens.
Mm.
You know, and this is the core of the work that I do, is to help people reclaim their essential self, their authentic self, the loving self, the trusting self, the self that understands that the world is not out to get them.
Mm.
You know, and when you are doing this work and this breath work, you do go back in and you realize that you don't trust your parents, you don't trust the world, you don't trust yourself.
Mm.
You know, so you're operating from that lens.
Mm. And they can be through, like, this is not right enough for parents, because they can be through the subtlest of unconscious impressions.
Totally.
You know? Yeah.
All of us, I'm a parent, yeah. You know. I realize how things I've done that have been detrimental to my children, you know. It's just the level of consciousness that you're at, you know. Mm. So what happens is we have these little niches in our body that have trauma tucked away, and they ultimately become disease. But there's a time in our life when we can't hold them down anymore, and that's around the teenage years. And that's why we're so depressed and so unhappy in the teenage years, you know. So what happens when you're breathing, so much more I could say about that.
I know.
What happens when you're breathing is that you're bypassing the thinking mind, and the thinking mind's job is to keep this stuff down.
Gotcha. It fucking does a good job of it for
me. Yeah, it does a great job, and that's why we want to honour it and say thank you. We're not here to make the mind bad.
Yeah.
We're just here to say, okay, it's time now that I take the reins.
Yeah.
And I want to actually process this trauma and integrate it. But the mind is so used to doing that, it goes, no, you can't go there, you'll die.
Mm.
So there's a bit of a battle, which is why you get the tetany, the pain, you know, the fear to start with. No, I'm not going there.
That wasn't me, by the way, everyone. I was cool as
No, he was cool. No, he came right straight there, yeah.
My wrist was like, oh,
yeah,
totally.
Yeah, and then once you, and it's, you know, depending on how safe you feel with the person who's holding space, as to whether you feel, okay, I can actually trust this space to go there. And whether you've already made a decision with yourself that I'm going to go there, I want to do this work.
Yes.
You know, so you will bypass all of that pain, that fear, that everything to go into the niches in your body that hold the memory.
Right.
And the pain that you feel in your body is what takes you into the niche.
The pain is right. I got
so you. That's why when someone's like, say, okay, for example, you were fidgeting and itching, and I said, what would it be like just to stop?
That's right.
And see where that takes you. And that's where it took
so
you
itchy.
In really quickly.
Yeah.
It took you into the anger, you know, because it's like it's coming up, the niche, the emotion is coming up, but your brain's going, stop it.
By scratching it away.
But if you invite it rather than stop it, invite it, let's get bigger. Let's see what you really are. Then you'll notice an emotion. It'll stop being an itch and it'll start to be, I feel agitated. What's agitation? Pissed off. What's pissed off? Angry. And then you might actually go, I'm actually full of rage. And then you'll drop into how much rage you feel. And that will take you deeper into when that happened. And your facilitator is the one who will start to, you know, question you. What age are you now? You know, what's happening? So that you drop deeper into an actual memory of when you first felt that rage.
Mm.
You know, and that's what happened to you. And that's when you accessed that experience in the womb straight away. You know, you went there straight away. And each session is different, you know. This first one, you went into the womb, you might go into teenage years, you might go into age 6, you might go into before, like a past experience, past life, in between life, when, you know, there's all sorts of things that you're going to be able to integrate through this work. Mm. Yeah.
And what's your understanding about like the production line of what's up next? You know, like, because you just get served up whatever happens in that thing. Is it worth even trying to understand what comes up next? Like, because sometimes you might go, you want to address something specific, but when you go into a brief, I assume just whatever your body's intelligence wants to process will process.
Well, it's kind of understanding that we have this understanding or belief, or we're taught to believe that our mind is what knows, and it's not. Our mind actually doesn't know. It's our bodies that know.
Mm.
So if it's the mind going, okay, well, I want to do this or I want to do that, then okay, you probably can do that, but it would be wiser to just drop into the intelligence of your body allow your body to guide you.
Mm.
And that can be a wild ride, like a roller coaster, because your mind doesn't want you to go there.
Mm.
It's still trying to, so it's like that feeling when you're on a roller coaster and you're like, oh, no, I don't want to, no, you know?
Totally.
Yes.
I was doing that before we were going to it. I was started giggling with nerves. I was like, I'm so nervous, Redlin. Like, I'm just like,
yeah, which was beautiful because your body was bringing it up, but your mind was going, oh, no.
I felt like, oh, this is going to do something.
Yeah.
And I suppose sometimes you just don't get that. Hey, how often do you do a breathe and nothing significant comes through?
For a client or for myself? For
either, yeah.
It's not very often.
Mm.
And often we can use it anyway. You know, like I always say to people, you know, nothing might happen and this could be really mundane. I think I even said that to you.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, this could be just a really mundane experience and every day, nothing. And then how would you feel about that?
Yeah.
What would that be like if it wasn't?
Is that your own mind stopping that though? Is it pretty hard to stop what naturally wants to come up once you breathe?
No, I don't think it is your mind. I think it's actually sometimes you're just in the present moment.
Right.
And sometimes it's people can get really addicted to the drama.
Mm.
They want to do another breath work because it was so dramatic and so activating and so full on.
Yeah.
And I love it when someone doesn't have that and they just have really present in the moment. I'm just here. And I feel kind of expansive and spacious, but I'm just here. Nothing's happening.
Mm.
Beautiful. Let's just be here together then.
Mm.
And how does that feel? You know, and sometimes it's like, I don't know how it feels. There's no feeling. Wow. You know, let's just be in that.
And what would you say about like when you get feelings in your day to day when you aren't breathing? Like, for example, I always got an itch around here. Like, is that the same thing that's going on? There's some sort of disease under there. It's purging something that wants to come out.
Well, I would be curious.
Yeah.
So I would just allow myself to be curious to this. If it's a constant itch in one spot, I would breathe into it and I would invite it to get bigger.
Gotcha. Yeah. Right, interesting.
Yeah.
So invite it out.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. Yeah.
And it might just be nothing. It might just dissolve and you go, oh, okay, and go about my day. Or it might start to inform you of something.
Right.
You might have a memory or you might start, another feeling might come up. You know, and there's a practice that I teach, which is one of Leonard Orr's practices, and it's cellular memory release, it's called. And it's just that very thing. So when you feel a sensation or an emotion coming up during your day, you just breathe 4 regular breaths connected and then 1 big one. And then 4 regular breaths and then 1 big one. Still doing the connected like I taught you. So it's still a figure eight, but there's just sort of smallish one and then 1 big one.
Okay.
So you don't go into the activated full-on breath,
but
you're still coming into the present moment and sending the breath into that space. You know, so you can kind of do that out in the world, you know, if you're feeling triggered and something's come up and you don't want to scream at someone, you can drop in and then you can be curious about why am I so activated by what that person said or did, you know, and it's because you've got a big niche of anger that you're working through at the moment and it's coming up and that person, the nuance of their voice or the way that they look or, you know, reminded you of your mum or your dad or, you know, so you can take responsibility for that rather than spewing it out on someone, you know, and by using that cellular memory release technique, you can allow it to come up a bit more. And you might have to excuse yourself, have a bit of a cry or grab a hand towel and scream into it and then come out and be feeling clearer, you know?
But it comes through in a similar way. It comes through physically.
And through then a sensation.
Yeah.
It's kind of, I mean, I've done a lot of Vipassana as well. So Vipassana is about, you know, sort of allowing the sensation, remaining neutral.
Yeah, yeah.
As the sensation comes up.
Yeah,
So we're sort of, you know, when you practice this more and more and more, you do remain neutral because you're in your witness and you talked about, you know, being in the witness yesterday. But at the same time, you're also in the emotion and the turmoil and the trauma. But you're not fully in it because then you're re-traumatizing yourself. So if there's a part of you that understands you're in more of a witness space, but a big chunk of you is processing and acknowledging and really going there into what happened and allowing it through your body by continually breathing, because there's nothing to do but breathe. There's no thinking to be, there's no how do I process this, there's no how do I work through this, it's just the breath.
But once you get to the, I noticed once you get, because you said initially I would breathe for the whole hour, but then once we arrive at the destination, it's like a train that gets us there, right? And then once we arrive at the destination, I can process because I have to talk, and so I stop the breathing. Is that the right?
Absolutely. It's, you know, like, to, especially for me as the facilitator, to know what's going on, because I jump in there with you. I'm there with you.
I'm there. Yeah.
So I'm hearing what's going on. I'm like, okay, right. So I can navigate what's. But then once you're, you know, moving, the bulk of the emotion is moved through, I get you back into the breath.
Yes, that's right, you did. Yeah.
So back into the breath.
Once my nose cleared. Because you blew my nose. It was the most beautiful experience. It's like because I was crying and my nose is fully blocked and I was like, I can't breathe. And
That's because you were in your little baby.
Yeah.
I can blow your nose for you when you're in your little baby.
38-year-old big baby man.
Well, when you're 38, you blow your own nose. Yeah. But you were the baby.
That's true, I was, wasn't I?
Yeah, you were the baby.
Oh, I loved him so much.
Yeah, it's beautiful to really, because that still is who you are, you know, and that's what we forget. We think, oh, I'm a grown-up now. No, you're the baby, the toddler, the child, the teenager, the young adult. You're all of it. And that's the other, you know, essence of this work is that soul retrieval, is retrieving those parts of yourself. And those parts of yourself, once they're retrieved, they remind you. You know, like you're forever reminded now that of all those things that you learnt in the womb. That as soon as you tap into that infant, that little baby, you're reminded of the things that you learnt about yourself in the womb. You know?
And you change your I was just amazed at how quickly it came through, how clearly it was what I felt about my little infant, or like little baby in the womb. And the love I had for him and how sweet he was. And that was the essence of me and what I wanted for him and what I wanted to tell him. And you're having this, it's like you're in such an altered state and you're having this very like almost psychedelic experience with time's non-linear. You're dropping into this, like, where is that in consciousness? Where are we actually accessing? Like it's stored in the cells, I suppose, what you're saying, in the body.
Yeah.
But... you know, I suppose it's just fascinating. There's so many different limbs of healing, and you can, you know, like meditation's very cerebral and transcending the mind, or like oscillating your willpower between mantra and thought mantra. So you're like exercising your witness capacity. But then this is something so different and so much more physical and intense and right, feel it to heal it right into the body. And they're both great tools and do different things. But what's your understanding of the different, I suppose, limbs of healing or... yeah, I suppose like yoga has different limbs, don't it? Like bhakti and devotional or physical. But if you, what's it?
Yeah, okay. So I really think they all have a common thread. And I, you know, when this, I mean, breath work is just one thread of the whole elemental purification, which comes from the Indian Babaji tradition. Comes, you know, and he's an immortal yogi. So to reach immortality in their lineage, you purify all of the elements. So the understanding is that we are made up of earth, air, water, fire, and it's ether that brings it all together, so spirit, to create human.
Right.
So the understanding is that we create ourselves in our mother's womb. So we've, up until, you know, like thinking about this, we think our mother creates us, that our mother owns us.
Yeah, yeah. I remember saying that and you corrected me.
Yeah. Well, I didn't correct you. I just kind of offered this other perspective. Yeah, and that's what we like to do, just offer a perspective. True. It's definitely, we don't know if it's true or not. It's a working hypothesis.
Yes.
And for me, it feels, I love it because, you know, then I'm not, I'm not owned by my parents. My, you know, there's a real, in the past, a real ownership over your children.
Mm.
You know, that I made you,
you
belong to me.
Mm.
And when you start to, you know, especially if you've had a lot of trauma around your parents, you sort of, you can let go of that and you can actually think, well, my mother actually offered her womb to me to make myself, you know, to draw in all of the elements and create this human body that I am and then birth myself. And when you look at birth itself, it kind of makes sense because the placenta belongs to the baby. Because if it's left in the mother, it will kill the mother. So it's actually a foreign object to the mother. And the baby has its own chemicals that it releases to tell the mother's body that it's ready to be birthed. So it's, you know, it's this dance between the mother and the baby, you know.
Mm.
So when you sort of drop into that and you think, well, I made myself out of these elements and I'm a pure being when I was born, and then it's, you know, all the things that happened to me through being, you know, the child of unconscious parents, going into a society that's quite unconscious, eating toxic foods or, you know, doing toxic things, behaviours, speaking in a toxic way, thinking in a toxic way. You know, after a while, I kind of forget who I am. I forget, you know, where did I come from? Who am I? What am I here for?
Yeah.
All of this sort of stuff. And we're trying to fix it with the mind, because I studied psychology for a long time, you know, and then I found breathwork and I made a quick exit out of psychology and into breathwork because I realized the mind can't heal the mind. And
wow, you can't fix the problem on the level of the problem.
No way.
Einstein, someone smart said that, I don't know.
Yeah, someone with an incredible mind said that.
Yeah,
it probably was Einstein.
Yeah,
so, you know, when I look at this level of this work, breath work is just one part of the elemental purification. And the breath, the air is the mind, it purifies the mind. So, and then you go into the water purification. So we do water work as well, which is the underwater breath work. And the water is, you know, emotion, the flow, you know, really just allowing yourself to become more of a flowing being and trusting and moving in, you know, in a different way in the world.
Mm.
And then the earth is the material, the ability to manifest things, you know, that we are the creators, you know.
Mm.
And then the fire, you know, burns up karma. It's the rage, you know, passion, purpose, all of that kind of stuff.
Mm.
You know, so meditation, is part of the spiritual aspect, the fifth element, the ether, you know, the connection to source.
Right.
And if you haven't done all of the other purification, it's really difficult to meditate, you know, because you still got all of the stuff you're trying to push down.
True.
You know, to be, you know, connecting to source and be remembering who you are.
Yeah.
And for me, because I've done a lot of Vipassana meditation, for me, breath work is like a quicker way.
Yeah.
It's like a fast track because it's purifying that. So at the end of a breath work session, I can drop into a very deep meditation.
Right, right. Yeah. Well, they actually say that in yoga. The whole point of asana and pranayama is to prepare the body for meditation.
Yeah.
Like that's the sequence of doing it. You do asana, then you do breath, and then you drop into meditation because it primes you for a deeper dive.
Exactly. Yeah. And if I had have left you yesterday and didn't talk, you know, and I just kind of left you and
I probably would have loved to
have gone into a deep meditation.
Oh yeah, it would have been juicy. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's what I like to do, you know, in the online stuff is just prepare people after they've you know, not in your first session, I won't do that.
Mm.
But after I've worked with people for a while, they know that I'm just going to sign out.
Right.
And they're going to drop in deep and then we'll check in later.
Right, yeah. Right.
Because that's right. Just a really beautiful space to just be like, boom, you know.
Mm. You start getting more clarity about your behavior. You get more clarity about what you want to do. I suppose because you've removed the
thinking mind.
Yeah, the thinking mind and the lenses that blur your vision.
Yeah.
And you can just start to see things more purely, I guess.
Yeah.
One thing I really, really loved about yesterday that I think there's many aha moments, but one that really hit me between the eyes was how you talked about accepting our imperfections. Like, I think in my pursuit of wellness and healing myself and removing suffering and all these kind of things, I'm a bit purist about it. I'm like trying to get to a destination where I'm safer.
Mm.
And that to me is removing as many of my dysfunctions as possible. Mm. So I have jurisdiction about my inner reality and I'm in control here.
Okay.
But the way you talked about like embracing your imperfections, I can't even remember what you said, but I remember you just said it and I was just like, oh my God. You know, in specifically in relation to relationships, it's like this thing of, you know, we're never really going to be at a point where we're primed and perfect and ready for a relationship, for example.
Like, or parenthood.
Or parenthood, or, you know, yeah. Yeah.
Or death, or birth.
Yeah, yeah.
And, or a job.
Yeah.
Or run your own business.
No.
No.
And so there's not this, and for me, I'm just like, I always try to think like that because I'm like, oh, you know, I just found it incredibly refreshed and liberating to go, it's like that, which I've often had with my imperfections and others, is just like this acceptance, but Stormzy big yawn, but this feeling of like taking them, or total acceptance, but also knowing that they create the character and they're fun to play with and we need them and they're beautiful. They're part of what makes us.
But what if your imperfections were your child that was inside of you, the wounded child? What if that was your imperfection? Would you want to get rid of it, or would you want to integrate and bring it even closer?
Yeah.
You know, it's looking at actually asking yourself, what do I mean when I say imperfection? What do I mean when I say I'm imperfect? What do I mean?
Well, for me, it's having an anxiety around not being safe in the world.
So the anxiety in that moment, you drop in and you think, is something happening in my current situation that warrants this level of anxiety? Usually it's no. Mm. So then it's from the past, which means it's the younger version of me.
Mm.
So what would I do with that younger version of me? Do I want to push it away and say, you're not welcome around here? Mm. Or do I want to bring it close and say, oh yeah, like it was unsafe for you then. Like, and I want you close. And I love you like you did with that little baby, you know. And then you can be kind of integrating and forgiving yourself for feeling anxious in the moment rather than saying I'm not perfect.
Right, nice.
You can say I'm experiencing something that's not integrated yet. Right. Which is a part of me from the past that's still feeling unsafe and not acknowledged. Because when we get older, we become our parents. You know, we can't expect our parents to parent us anymore. Yeah. They parented us the best they could. Yeah. And
I try.
It was pretty shitty probably most of the time.
Yeah.
And now we're the ones who have to parent ourselves, you know.
Mm.
And if we can really show up to parent ourselves, then what amazing parents we can be to the children that we want to bring into the world, you know. And continually repairing the damage that you see as an imperfection inside your own being is what the work is. It's not about pushing it away and trying to be better than.
The mind does, I'm so aware after the session how much my mind does that.
Yeah.
Like, and it pushes it away by just not literally by not bringing it closer. it's like
well, because you don't want to feel.
Yeah, and I also do the thing that you picked up in me of like I wrap lots of thoughts around it. What was that thing you said? Oh, it was like I try hard. Like if I'm feeling pain, I try harder. Or something came up that was really beautiful. It was around that, I think. It's like I don't feel safe, so I'm just going to try harder to be loved.
Yes.
Or something like that. And,
yeah.
So what can I do?
Yes, yeah. And that would have been you as a child.
Mm.
You know, how can I create peace? How can I make this a peaceful space right now? What can I do? What can I do? You know, so that's a habit that you've gotten into rather than feeling that lack of safety in the moment right now, you know. And often we want our partner to be perfect because when they're being imperfect, they're triggering feelings in us that we don't want to feel. You know, so we're like, oh, they're not good enough for us, or they're imperfect, or, you know, but it's actually, oh, what am, it, this is for me to feel because this is mine, you know.
So what's your advice or tips on, like, language? Because I noticed language, and the person that introduced me to you as well, that has a very specific language that they learned from you, which is about how you, like, for example, if I express some vulnerability or need, you say, thank you for sharing that, or something like that. I remember, like, you go, thanks for sharing. Well, like, you acknowledge and show gratitude for the vulnerability coming up. Like, that's one mechanism I've noticed that I adore. I love that. Like, when I share and they go, thank you for sharing. Or, like, that, it's just beautiful.
It is beautiful.
Yeah.
It means that you have allowed me to get to know you at a deeper level, and I'm so grateful for that.
Yeah, and you are. Like, I froth vulnerability. When someone dear to me is vulnerable, I'm just like, all I want to do is pull you closer.
Totally, because we're beings that want connection. We really do want connection. You know, and when someone's vulnerable, it means, and vulnerability is just, here's my heart. Here's my heart. Like, this is who I am. And I am imperfect. I'm willing to admit to you that I'm imperfect, whatever that means, that I have a trauma that I'm still recognizing and working through and acknowledging.
It's adorable.
Yeah.
It's like an adorable, oh, it's just so beautiful.
Yeah. I mean, when you see people who are so guarded, it's like, it's a pity. It's a shame that you, you know, I really just want you to drop in, because then I'm, you know, I get to know you, and you acknowledge me with that vulnerability. You know, you acknowledge that I'm a safe person. How amazing. Thank you.
I know.
Yeah.
What are some of the other mechanisms or languages other than that one, like, that you would recommend or tell people to do in terms of, like, you know, when you're in it with your partner or a friend or whatever it may be, your child, like, how, what's the kind of language if someone's been triggered, right? You and I have been triggered right now. You said something that's triggered me, and I'm reacting. What's the kind of language you'd use in the space holding, like asking for space, or do you need space? Would you want me near or far? Or thank you for sharing. What do you need right now? I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I think there's something that is really kind of in the forefront of what I express to people whenever they want to come and do this work, is that there has to be a high level of self-responsibility. And I think that that's a really important part of your language, is to keep acknowledging that you're responsible for your trigger, 100%. Like, it's not, if somebody can't trigger you, they can only show you what's there inside of you, you know? So to become more responsible for that trigger, I mean, you can invite your partner to be responsible, and it depends on how much work you've done on yourself, you know. If you're inviting your partner to be responsible and they're freaking out at you and telling you, you know, to fuck off and how dare you say that and blah, 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 blah. You know, if you're wobbly and not sure, then you're going to engage in a bit of a warfare with them, you know.
Yeah.
Which in that instance, you might say, I don't feel like I can be a safe person for you at the moment, and I don't feel like you can be a safe person for me at the moment. So maybe we'll just, you know, move apart, or do you want to do some breath work? Scream into a towel, I'll go over here, you go over there.
Yeah, nice.
You know, it's like I don't have to hold the space for you because I'm not your therapist.
I love how you said that.
Yeah, it's really important not to set yourself up as your partner's therapist. You know,
because I think we can go into that because love, when you love someone, you want to do anything for them.
Yeah.
And so you start to naturally do those things, but you like compromise your own.
Well, you got to look at, why do I want to do this? Oh, I'm afraid at the moment. I'm afraid they're going to leave me unless I give them everything. So then actually your partner ends up probably not respecting you because you've kind of sacrificed yourself in a little way, your position, you know, because you've come in, in some kind of fear of abandonment. So your stuff's coming up. So I think the more work you do on yourself, the more familiar you get with your stuff, your core stuff, and you know, oh, that's that coming up right now. So I can't behave from a centered place. I'm actually behaving from a place of, I'm really worried that you're going to leave me if I don't give you everything now.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're coming from a place of, I just want to walk all over you right now and stomp on you like you're just a doormat and I'm actually losing respect for you right now.
Yes.
You know, so that dynamic starts to happen.
Yes.
And that's not sexy in a relationship, is it? Mm. So you just don't really want to go there.
But what is sexy, I find, is this level of like stable sureness of what it is you want to contribute while also pulling, like, honouring yourself. And the healthy version is just, like, knowing your worth, essentially. Like,
yes, going, well done,
I know my worth and what I want to give you is this, very clearly.
Yep.
But also if things start tipping over or I start to feel a bit used or I start to feel like I'm going beyond myself to do something because I'm anxious about you not loving me, then I need to clock that. And sometimes they might clock that as well.
Yeah.
But the trick I find is, I mean, just having language around all this shit, like the shared language where you can at least, because we're going to go through shit and we're going to be imperfect and we're not always going to be ready.
Yeah.
And so it's really the trick is to just be, to have language and tools and awareness as much as possible.
Yeah.
And there's always, the chances are, at least one of someone in the situation of heat is going to be a little bit more conscious. So it's kind of the responsibility of the person that's less drowning in a way.
Yeah.
Like if,
and that'll vacillate as well.
Yeah.
You know, it'll vacillate. And sometimes that's uncomfortable for the person who maybe sees themselves as the more conscious one to be like, oh, I'm not feeling like I'm the more conscious one at the moment.
I don't want this role. But that, you're right, it changes, doesn't it, at any given point? Because it's kind of based.
It should do. It should change. Mm. Otherwise, there's a power play going on. You know, there's one person who requires to be in power all the time and the other person as a victim-perpetrator relationship.
Mm.
Yeah.
It's fascinating. So it's like, so going on that specific area of how you was a psychologist and then you pivot to breathwork.
Well, I never became a psychologist.
Right, you're studying though.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so there's someone else I was speaking to, Andre, who does treatments at your retreats, physical massage treatments that are amazing because they, you know, as you know, they trigger. It's like almost spiritual surgery with his hands. He's like going into the anatomy, kind of doing what your breathwork does, but going into the pain and pressing it and then it releases and then you cry.
So good.
It's just amazing.
Yeah.
It's literally like his hands are surgery hands.
Yeah.
But I'm going to study it this coming weekend because he's doing a teaching course. Yeah. I was catching up with him this morning and he was saying, there'll be so many parallels with your work, how he's less in the mind and science based and logic based of all his practice and in the intuition with his practice. And my understanding or experience of the intuition is it's like connected to some supreme intelligence of the whole collective field. So of consciousness, of existence. So when you listen to that, there's no more trustworthy source of information out there. And so, but we've, in our society, it's been squandered.
Yeah.
And yeah, I'm just, like, to hear his conviction, and obviously you embody that conviction, I can see it so much as well. I have such celebration for him, like, fuck yeah, man. Like, that's the direction we all need to go more. Yeah. Like, absolutely. Because he just trusts it and he knows it's intuitive body massage, he calls it. And it's like you're doing the same thing, intuitively going and listening and responding and that kind of... what's your... How do you describe your intuition? Like, and what's the texture of it? Or what does it feel like when you know it or you don't?
Yeah, okay. So I don't question it anymore at all.
Really?
No. Wow. Not for one second.
Wow.
I think I have always had a highly developed intuition. I grew up with a lot of trauma, like high level trauma. And that made me, when I was younger, hypervigilant. So I think hypervigilance can lead, if you do a lot of work on yourself, into a very high level intuition, because you're always reading and watching the environment. So it's like a training in a way. Mm-hmm. And doing a lot of work on myself. Like, I'm so much gratitude for my childhood now. Deep freaking gratitude. Like, mastery level training was my childhood. And
explain that more.
Well, growing up in a single parent household with a very absent mother, completely absent father, and a brother with mental illness, schizophrenia, and all sorts of stuff.
Mm.
So, yeah, very much like I came in to obviously be where I'm at now. And learn, and I had a grandmother who was highly spiritual.
Mm.
So I just absolutely, I was obviously meant to have her as my grandmother. You know? So I had this incredible spiritual connection, but I had to do the deep sludge shadow work as well to integrate all of that.
Mm.
So I see a lot of people just wanting to bypass that and go into the spiritual connection, which there's a danger in that, you know. So my intuition, when I was really starting to work with my intuition, I didn't know what it was. It was just this deep knowing. And I would, like when I teach people, you know, to be breathwork practitioners, I say to them, if it comes up 3 times, do it. Just wait for the 3rd time if you're not sure. You know, and what it is, it's just, it comes from down here and also here.
Mm.
And it's just a knowing. It's just like, and it can come in a split second, like, oh, he's in the womb, or oh, his mother did this, or his mother did that, or his father, oh, yep. Like, it's like I just, I can see, I can feel, I can hear everything that's going on. I can smell.
Really?
Yeah. I can smell
my
sexual
sweat?
Trauma. No.
Oh, really?
I can smell. I know when I'm working with someone who's had really hardcore trauma.
Wow.
Because trauma has a whole lot of different smells.
Wow.
And it's just something I'm attuned to. It's not, I didn't mean to, it just happened. So that it's information. I'm so deeply present to the non-physical, non-verbal information that's all around. And it's just, it's been a lifelong learning. And I think it did definitely come from having to be very aware of everyone's mood to keep me safe.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah. So I look at it now as like a ninja training, you know, that I am so grateful for. Obviously, I wasn't in my teenage and early 20s before I found some kind of work to do.
Yeah.
Found Vipassana in my early 20s.
Right.
But, I look at it now and I just go, wow, what an incredible training I had to drop into these non-verbal, non-physical messages, to be able to read people and understand what was going on. And I also had these beautiful people in my life when I was 11. The woman down the road, she was a concert pianist, and I fed her cats in exchange. She taught me numerology.
Wait, fed her cats?
Yeah.
Oh, fed her cats. Oh, my God.
Cats to eat? I love cats. Yeah, so she taught me numerology.
It was funny because you did it so nonchalant.
Yeah.
I fed her dogs to eat. Yeah.
Beautiful. Yeah. So I had these little tools to understand people, you know.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to understand people. I wanted to know why people were in so much pain and why people would cause so much pain and why there was so much chaos. Because I think I was born quite a peace-loving person into a very chaotic, full-on family that I just felt. I couldn't quite understand why I was here. So my intuition was something that I developed in order to survive.
Wow.
Yeah. And now it's a bit of a superpower for me.
For sure.
Yeah. And so I teach people how to use their intuition.
Because I saw this program in India, they're developing Sri Shank Sharia or some geezer in India is doing it. But like, it's basically an intuition program for kids where they train them to master their sixth sense, which is, sounds like what you've mastered. And the stuff that they're showcasing, my mate's making a documentary about it, blew me away just watching what they're doing. Like, it's like unequivocal, like it looks like magic. They can, they know where, like one kid was blindfolded and proper blindfolded. And the teacher was like to the audience, grab something and move it around the room and put it somewhere else. And the kid not only found it, but went to the places that that person went to, and knew what their thoughts were.
Yeah.
It was, oh, I might put it in here. No, I won't. And then went and put it under here and walked in with the blindfold, not even looking where they're walking.
Yeah.
And found a thing. It was a mobile phone. They just picked up and moved. And you're just like, how can you fake that? Like,
oh, we all have that ability.
It's insane. It's,
we all have that ability. It's only insane because it's
not present.
It's forgotten.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's only, and when you start to switch those superpowers on, because we, you know, humans, we're remarkable creatures, you know, and we've forgotten how remarkable we are.
Mm.
And when you start to do these practices of purification and you know, even just with intention, studying your intuition, starting to do things like that, where you become more attuned, deeply attuned to things that aren't spoken, you know, and aren't, you know, sort of shown in a gross way. Like, we're so used to that gross communication.
Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah, so it's becoming attuned to the subtle.
Subtle, I know.
Yeah.
It's easily squandered. Like, particularly in our society, it's very loud and noisy and attention-grabby. And the beauty and the subtle, beautiful layers, they're just like, they haven't got a chance. They're just like...
Yeah, walking bare feet
out
in the forest, you know. And that's Leonard. This is what I've studied quite a few different styles of breath work. And I came back to more of the rebirthing lineage of Leonard, because a lot of other breath work, they do mouth breathing or they do really cathartic. I've done a cathartic training as well. But Leonard, once you really master this breath work, it becomes the most subtle, because you breathe prana, you're actually not using your breathing mechanism anymore. And this is what the mortal yogis do, is they actually become, the prana is actually moving in and out of their being constantly. You don't have to use your lungs.
I've heard this, Paramahansa did this, yeah.
Yeah, and they've proven it by being buried under the ground for years at a time, and being dug up and they're completely alive. It's because they're prana breathing. They're just breathing source. You know, they're not even breathing. And this is what, I have had an experience of this when I had one of what I actually called like a spiritual initiation into the breath work, when I knew that I was going to be teaching this style of breath work. And I had...
Is that the 4-hour one you said?
Yeah. Yeah. And I had a being at my feet blow the breath up into my body, and I described the being to Pauline, and it was Babaji.
Oh.
And yeah, and then my body breathed me. Like, I wasn't using my air my lungs. I wasn't breathing in and out, but
your ribs went expanding.
My whole body was just doing this, and luckily,
I paused anatomically.
It's what is called suspended breath. So you're not breathing anymore. And, you know, and if somebody doesn't know this, they'll freak out. But luckily for me, I had Pauline, who is one of my main breathwork mentors. She's in her late 70s now. She knew what was happening, and she was able to sit with me for a long period of time while I didn't breathe.
How long do you reckon, did she say?
Very long time.
Like 10 minutes?
No, more than that. Yeah, and I've facilitated people in this suspended breath too.
Because I stopped breathing at some point.
You had a suspended breath, yeah.
But it was only like 20 seconds or something. Yeah.
But the more breath you do, the more breathing that you do, the more that your body trusts and switches on. It's like the more you purify, the more you're able to switch on this new human, this superhuman, you know, mechanism, which we all have. It's all... in our DNA, it's you know, it's what Einstein talked about, you know.
And, you're just saying Einstein because he's one smart geezer out there.
Well, he's just one of the people who is well respected.
Yes, and
who said this stuff in the West, and he's Western.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so a lot of Eastern spiritual people have said this for eons, but they don't get the credibility that, you know, a European white man. So we like to say Einstein. So go, okay, well, that maybe that's got some credibility. I might look into that.
I better listen.
Yeah,
he's a white man.
She said Einstein. Yeah.
She said Einstein. I bet he didn't even say it and he was just using it.
Probably not. No, he did,
no, actually. No, I know. And so, because the thing that I remember reading and what Paramahansa Yogananda did is he was on a stage once and he stopped his heartbeat. Like doctors came up and they read his heart. It wasn't beating. Is that another one of the limbs of what you can do?
Sure.
Have you heard of that one?
Or, it's not one that I'm really that interested in. Yeah. So I haven't really looked into it. I haven't had that experience. I don't usually research anything that I haven't yet had an experience of because, you know, if I'm going to have an experience of it, then I'm supposed to kind of research and understand it. Because I don't, for me, it has to be an experiential thing. I don't want to just research from the mind.
Interested. Yes.
Yeah. So for me, having that experience of that suspended breath for an extremely long period
of time. It's crazy that you experienced that.
Yeah, and having this being blow it into me was when I knew that my life is never going to be the same again, and obviously this is where my life is now.
Wow.
Teaching this breath, because how can I not teach this when this is remarkable? It's, you know, it was a huge initiation for me, and it's a lot of people. I don't talk about it that much actually, because it's kind of beyond a lot of people's comprehension or understanding, and they want to know scientifically, well, what happened? How come you didn't die? And what happened? And well, scientifically, I don't know, but spiritually, intuitively, emotionally, I know what happened. My super abilities as a human being switched on, and I didn't need my breathing mechanism. I was able to absorb life force through my whole being. And I think that's what we do as babies in the womb. We already know how to do that.
Yeah, right. And true.
Yeah, and then we're born and we get cut straight away from our placenta. So we have to use our breathing mechanism. Whereas if we were gently, we would know how to breathe prana. We would already be switched on superhumans, you know? So this is what we're, you know, wanting to get back to, wanting to remember, is that we are these, we are immortal beings, actually.
Physically, or you mean spiritually? Soul is.
Leonard taught physical immortality,
right?
But he died, so a lot of people lost faith.
Mm.
My understanding of that is he comes from a lineage of white European, so there's a whole lineage of, you know, toxicity and trauma, and how could he in one lifetime master? You know, I do believe that we have the ability to become enlightened, which is light bodies. I don't feel, I don't think we have to die. The body doesn't have to die. And that's what Leonard did, is he went to India in the 60s looking for an immortal yogi. That's where he found breathwork. So he found an immortal yogi, and that was Babaji. And so he learned all the purification processes of him, brought them back to America.
Did he find him physically? Because Babaji's meant to still be physically.
Yeah, he found him physically.
Wow.
Yeah, and Pauline still takes people to India to meet Babaji.
Wow. An incarnation or
an incarnation of Babaji. The Maharaj is a good book to read to get an understanding of that lineage.
Yeah.
And there's a couple of other books, The Autobiography of a Yogi, which, you know, everyone's read. But if you want to get and that is this lineage. So they are Korea. Of this lineage.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
That thing of mystical experiences and how they can bewilder people is really, like, they are such personal things, aren't they? Like, but direct experience with anything of the mystical, is it like how you download, is the best way to be informed, really? Like, we can be book smart, we can read things, and, you know, you get some teachers that have just read a few self-help books and then they're teaching. It's like without any kind of like level of, and that's what I would define as woo-woo, when they haven't like integrated or embodied what it is. But like, I think it's beautiful how you hold that, and I appreciate you sharing that, because it can easily be bewildering. But if you haven't had a similar or a form of a mystical experience. But when you have, you always hear others that have, and you're like, oh, wow, it's so beautiful that you had that moment. Because it's, because they're the gifts. They come spontaneously and they inform us and they kind of change our lives and awaken you to what's actually going on here.
Yeah, it's an act of grace. And what I love about the description of grace is something that comes into your life that you don't necessarily deserve. And I think that's beautiful. But I do feel like that experience happened to me because I was willing to surrender to doing the work. It wasn't like, I'm not a bookish person, which is why studying psychology at uni just was not my path. Because I am an experiential person. I have to experience something in order to embody it, in order to believe it, in order to know it. And, you know, that's why for me, breath work is the greatest teacher, because it takes me deep into myself and switches on parts of me that I forgot. And it's hard work though, as you know, the resistance is real and it mind warping, like it messes with you. And if people aren't ready for this level of work, it can really slam you. And I had that experience when I did a year of cathartic breathwork training. It cracked me open so hard that I ended up becoming homeless with my kids. I think I mentioned that to you. I separated from their dad, and I just was a complete mess for a year. It my life fell apart, and all of the things that were my, worst case scenario happened to me. You know, worst case scenario being homeless with my two kids and not being able to be this ideal, perfect mother that I wanted to be, you know, with the house and the partner, and, you know, and everything just fell apart and I had to rebuild my whole self from scratch with two kids.
Whoa.
And they went through all of that with me, you know, and they're remarkable beings because of it, you know, and I'm so grateful that I did that. But, you know, I don't think everyone has to go through that level of, you know, hardship. But yeah, it was a desperate, I've got to get out of this unconscious life that I'm living.
Wow.
Because I know that I'm here for something different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They say when you awaken, you can awaken gradually or awaken rapidly, I suppose. And it sounds like a rapid awakening. But then the shift of, to print that out in your body and your circumstances is so, when it's so far from what your old life was, it's a massive respect for being able to pull that off. Like, it's testament to your strength and how you stand here before me in what you are, like that you're of that.
Yeah.
Like you, they are blessings in that sense, because it fortifies a level of consciousness that you couldn't get any other way.
Nope.
Yeah. So.
And I, like, I've been years of like, I'm so sorry to my kids, and they're like, Mom, don't be ridiculous. You're amazing. Don't worry about it. And I'm like, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. You don't have like the mum and the dad and the white picket fence and the, you know.
The guilt still lives on.
Oh, though. Totally. Yeah, it's just this. I look at them and they're like, I'm like, they deserve everything. And, you know, they're so beautiful. But my son is like, you know, he's working in Iraq and Saudi and, you know, working with refugees. And he's just such a beautiful being. You know, and he's just watched me, you know, just change, and, you know, he adores me and I adore him, and we've been through so much shit together, you know, and it just creates such a strong relationship. And my daughter and I are just, we just love each other so much, and she's just so honoring of me, and it's beautiful. I never thought you could have a relationship like that with your children, because I don't have that with my parents.
It's such a beautiful blessing.
So grateful.
Yeah, that you did that though. Like, and you, because a lot of parents might not have continued the relations in as a conscious way as you did.
Oh my goodness, yeah.
So a testament to what you gave them.
Thank
you so much for sharing. That was, I trust that was a beautiful experience for me, and I'm glad we can capture For the people that listen to this podcast, the essence of the immensity of your work. And you know, you're the real deal. There's a lot of teachers I find out there that you don't have. I mean, this is just maybe personal preference. I don't know what it is. I don't want to make a big sweeping statement. But for me, it's like one litmus test of a true teacher is not ever having that complex of like, I'm the only way, or like, it's also the understanding of take this and make it work for yourself and self-sustaining,
totally,
rather than you need me.
No.
Like, I think that's a really good sign of true intention.
Yeah.
And so I just appreciate you. Appreciate you so much for being like that.
Yeah, thanks, Jeremy. Mm. Beautiful. Thanks for offering this space. I'm always really open to, having this work more accessible.
Mm. Yeah. Well, I'll put the link in the podcast description so people can hit you up on your website and book you in if they want to.
Beautiful. Thank you. Gorgeous.